You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you this week?
Doing very well tonight, Chris. Just been a very easy-going day, actually, and just ready to talk some Deep Space Nine. I've been thinking, actually, pretty deeply about the subject that we're going to cover tonight, because it actually is probably one of the deepest subjects of the series, and so I was very excited that we had decided to cover Sisko as the emissary.
That's right. Yeah, tonight we're going to talk Sisko, but not just Sisko, but the Sisko, in terms of how the prophets refer to him. And this is Sisko as the emissary. When we first started talking about covering this, I believe I mentioned to you that I wanted to talk about Sisko as the unwilling emissary. The more I thought about it, I thought about his overall arc and how he came into this as the unwilling emissary, but he left it as someone who I think really embraced his role within the Bajoran religion.
I think you're right, and as we'll talk about a little bit later, I do see a lot of correlations between Sisko and Moses from the Jewish Old Testament, and so I think there's a lot of things that they pull from the Moses story and kind of give to Sisko. But one of the first things I wanted to ask you was, why make Sisko the captain of this space station and a Starfleet officer? Why make him a spiritual icon in the show?
It's an interesting question. And, you know, I often think about it and I wonder how deeply the writers thought about this from start to finish, because it's set up so well in Emissary. But I think in terms of a reason, I think that they wanted to paint from the beginning Sisko as a real person. You know, we talked about his role as a father. We talked about his struggles raising Jake alone as a single parent. And I think making him an unwilling religious icon to this planet that he's never been to before was yet another way of establishing some struggle of identity for him. You know, after the death of Jennifer, after he was assigned to the space station out in the wilderness, I feel like he was a man who had kind of lost his identity a little bit, kind of lost his life in a way. And that's something that Kaiopaka actually brings up in Emissary when she informs him that he would be the emissary to the Bajoran people.
And I also think it makes it interesting because it immediately sets Deep Space Nine apart from the previous TNG. A very religion-free zone, one might say. And then when it does deal with religion, it does it in a very 80s type way, kind of a new agey sense to it. But this brings a very real world sense of religion into Star Trek in a very down to earth and realistic fashion, but also does it in a way that, especially with making Sisko a kind of unwilling at the beginning religious icon, giving us a way to understand how the 24th century deals with this idea of religious life in the first place?
Well, that's a good point, because for me, as you know, I'm not a religious person myself. For me, there is a distinction between religion and spirituality. I think in the case of Cisco here, that you can put him in this position where, from the perspective of the Bajoran people, it is their religion and he is a religious icon. From his perspective as a Starfleet officer in the 24th century, who is accustomed to taking a scientific approach to everything, it brings into question this, the nature of the universe, and how do you cope with issues of spirituality yourself? And as we see with Sisko, as more and more he's introduced to events, to prophecies, to other elements of Bajoran culture, the way people react to him, he comes to believe it a little bit more, although it takes him a long time. But it is forcing him as a human to examine his place in the universe and what kind of spirituality he may believe in. And that's something that, like you said, we never saw on The Next Generation. It's something we didn't see in previous Star Trek. It was a way of setting Deep Space Nine apart as well.
Well, and you do have, as well, you have the prophets, and they are outside of space and time, and very much godlike. They are more removed than, you know, say a Judeo-Christian god from being very personal, and yet they do have a vested interest in Bajor and this society that they have had and allowed people to worship them. Unlike, say, the Q, who are very godlike in their powers, they're omnipotent and all these things, but they don't ask anybody to worship them. They're just out there doing things for their own benefit. And the prophets have actually allowed a whole religion to be built around them. And so that's just a very interesting thing. I think that one that Deep Space Nine was just at least not afraid to explore and to leave the door open for you to make your own judgment then.
Yeah, something to explore. The prophets are interesting to me because, like you said, they live outside of space and time. And we should also say, I actually want to interject just for a minute to make sure everyone understands the format of our show here, that we are talking broad Deep Space Nine. So we will reveal plots and events, you know, from throughout the series, from beginning to end. So, you know, if you haven't seen the whole series and you don't want to be spoiled, just a little warning there. So, in the beginning, in Emissary, there's this whole scene of great, actually very well-written, very deep conversation between Sisko and the wormhole aliens, who we come to know as the prophets, about linear time. And as you say, they have allowed the Bajorans to build a religion around them. And I sometimes question, what was the motivation of these wormhole aliens to allow that to happen? And as we get deeper into the story, and the reason that I gave a little spoiler warning there is that when we find out towards the end that Sisko's mother, Sarah, was possessed, taken over by one of these wormhole aliens, and that Sisko himself actually is half prophet in this case, and this took place on Earth, far away from Bajor, how does that all tie in? How much did the prophets think about Bajor and their need, it seems, to protect the Bajorans in the beginning? How much of this kind of unfolded as the series went along?
Well, and not only that, but as we've talked about a little bit before, this is the great struggle between good and evil, and the prophets are good and the Paw Wraiths are evil, and they're playing on this galactic scale, and they do have an impact on the actual Alpha Quadrant itself and the Gamma Quadrant, and they have an impact because there's this background battle going on. And this is actually very Christian in a sense. We have this idea in the Christian faith of having this background battle happening by unseen armies of right. the good versus evil. And it is impacting our world. So they've taken this idea from, you know, our religion and just kind of putting on a major scale of the universe itself and had this play out. And so giving us a picture of what that looks like between the Pod Wraiths and the prophets, and whether or not you necessarily like that kind of black and white-ness to the galaxy. Deep Space Nine, with all of its gray, in the end comes down to a battle between good and evil. And I think that that may be why so many people, when they watch this show, really begin to respond to it, because something in us enjoys films or stories where good does finally win out. There's just something in us that we really enjoy about that. It's why, you know, something like Lord of the Rings is so very popular, because we just enjoy seeing, in the end, good winning over evil. And so with Sisko, you get that progression too, as the Sisko, of becoming that hero that will kind of save the galaxy. And I think this is really interesting. And this is where, for me, I found it really interesting to see some correlations between a religious figure on our world and in our religion here on Earth, and Sisko himself. Moses is the greatest prophet in Jewish literature, and Moses, as many people know, is born, and his parents have to hide him, and they float him down the river, and he ends up growing up not knowing that he's a Hebrew, but he ends up growing up being raised by the Egyptians.
Right.
And he becomes a prince. You know, Sisko, in a lot of the same ways, he doesn't know, but he's born of the Bajoran people.
That's a good analogy. I of course know the story that Moses was, you know, born Hebrew, raised by Egyptians. I didn't really make that connection there, probably because I don't look closely at that particular angle, but that's a really good point. Yes, Sisko is born far away on Earth. And then he is carried to Bajor, almost like the flow of nature.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't realize that he is of Bajor. The prophets keep telling him that you are of Bajor. And it takes a while for him to understand that.
Well, and then the next thing that happens in Moses' life is that a murder happens for him. He kills an Egyptian who is killing a Hebrew. You know, for Sisko, what drives him into the wilderness of Deep Space Nine and this kind of far off place, is the death of his wife, and drives him into that and brings him. And then what happens in the wilderness to Moses? Well, we all know the story. He meets a burning bush. Well, Sisko has an orb experience, very yeah. much like, you know, you open up the orb box and it's enveloping you in its light. And he's spoken to by the prophets, and the prophets tell him, you know, who he is, what he's going to do. And then the story kind of just follows on from there. You know, Moses ends up having to challenge the people who have been keeping his people in exile for so long. And Sisko ends up having to face the Cardassians, Dukat, all of these things. And they all just kind of play out. So I think this is just very interesting to see that the writers must have put a lot of thought into this, because he really does follow this pattern of Moses is an emissary of God for his people. Sisko is an emissary for the prophets for his people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a hero's journey. You see that even in Star Wars a bit too, you know, when Luke Skywalker looks out and sees the suns, you know, there is that sign that can carry you through.
Excellent.
It's a very interesting analogy, and it's very appropriate. It fits very well. And it also, I think, highlights for me that you can read, as you can with most Star Trek, but especially with Deep Space Nine in these cases, you can read it from multiple angles. I got to thinking about One thing that got me thinking about it was the fact that we call the wormhole aliens prophets. But I was thinking about emissary as well, because I think you and I both, when we think of Sisko as the emissary, we do think of him as the religious figure to the Bajorans. But, you know, emissary, the word can have a lot of different meanings. And an emissary could be an ambassador, or an emissary could also be an apostle. And those are two very different paths. One is spiritual, and one is more political. And I think he plays both roles here. And he's an ambassador to Bajor on behalf of the Federation. He is tasked with preparing Bajor for admission to the Federation. At the same time, he is a bit like an apostle to the Bajorans, and the way that so many Bajorans on the station, you know, revere him. There's cases throughout. One case that stands out to me is in Ascension, where he starts to kind of embrace that role as a religious figure to the Bajorans when the newlywed couple wants him to bless their marriage, and he actually performs a prayer in his office in Bajoran for them, which is something that, you know, earlier Sisko, I think, would have never done. But he comes to gradually, I believe, play into both of these different angles of what it means to be an emissary.
And I think that that's what makes him, in this journey that he has as the Sisko, so interesting, is to watch somebody become more and more comfortable with the role that's been thrust upon them. I mean, Moses does not want this role. You know, he actually asks for this role not to be given to him, and God tells him no. In the same way, the minute that Kyle Paca tells Sisko that he's going to be the emissary, he's like, I'm not the emissary. This is not me. I'm not here to be a religious icon. I'm not here to be a part of any of this. I'm just here to help you get into the Federation. And yet, as we go on, Sisko is kind of drawn, I think, to the prophets and what they bring to him. And of course, he doesn't know, but he's actually one of them. And this is a very interesting character's journey to have this idea of identity and who we are, and trying to discover who we are. And Deep Space Nine is really all about that with its characters, all of them kind of finding out by the end of the show who they are. And Sisko, almost more than anyone else, I think Kira is the only one who has a path as deep as Sisko's and finding her identity.
Yeah. And Sisko's, sometimes his path to me feels like it's outside of the story, if that makes sense. Like, especially the way that Deep Space Nine evolved, the way that the conflict with the Dominion evolved, the way the war played out, that as the story goes on and on, it almost feels like, you know, here you have the whole Deep Space Nine story playing out, and then kind of outside of this, you have this additional arc for Sisko taking place. Like, he's going on two journeys. One of them is real everyday life, you know, pulling him through as a strategist in the later part of the war, as a Starfleet officer. But then there's this force of nature, the prophets, and this other force of nature that is pulling him somewhere else. And I almost feel like we have two different paths that he's going on at the same time, but they all come together.
I think that this is the beauty of Far Beyond the Stars and what we see in the beginning of season 7.
Yeah.
That this idea that there is something, and they're visualizing it, this idea that there is something outside of space and time that is actually writing the story of the universe. And specifically for Sisko, we see the small part that the Sisko is being, his story is being written for him. And this is that idea of that the prophets have predestined Sisko to be who he is and what he will do. And what a beautiful way to picture predestination in that kind of idea. This is a mind-blowing concept that they put into a wonderful episode of Deep Space Nine, Far Beyond the Stars, yeah. And really push that story of the Sisko fully into that spiritual realm. Really huge payoff, and a big risk, honestly. And yet it's become, I think, one of the most beloved stories because of what it does for, you know, the story of racism here,
yeah.
And that kind of story of identity. But then, of course, for the idea of spirituality. And even as we just celebrated Martin Luther King Day, we realized that spirituality has had a huge impact on helping free people from injustice, like people like Dr. Martin Luther King.
That is a great story. And if you haven't read the novelization of that episode, I recommend that you do that as well. And taking that story, and then what they did, as you mentioned, in Shadows and Symbols at the beginning of season 7, they latch on to that again. And it's interesting that in Far Beyond the Stars, you have the prophets giving this vision to Sisko to try to help him along, help him realize his importance. You know, they call him essential. And in Shadows and Symbols, you have the Pa Wraiths sending the same vision of Benny Russell to try to divert Sisko, because when he's searching for the orb of the emissary on Tyree, the Pa Wraiths don't want him to find it, because if they find it, then, you know, Sisko finally finds out more about who he is, and it can have a deep impact on this conflict between the prophets and the Pa Wraiths. But you talk about how some force outside of space and time is kind of writing the story of the universe. And there is that moment in Shadows and Symbols when Dr. Wyckoff tells him to stop writing, tells Benny Russell to stop writing. And Sisko, as Benny Russell, tells him that he can't stop writing, that he hasn't finished the story yet. Sisko has found the orb, but he hasn't opened it yet. And it is, in that sense, like there are these two supernatural powers tugging at one another and writing the story that we are living, in a sense.
Well, and it did such a great job of, you know, we all wonder in some sense sometimes, are we just in the imagination of somebody bigger, higher, like a god or something like that? Those questions have been asked before. And in this way, Deep Space Nine is answering that we are playing on a cosmic battlefield between good and evil, and they are at battle with each other. And, you know, in the Christian tradition, the devil is considered to be the most beautiful of angels, the angel of light. And he comes and deceives, not by giving somebody a vision of darkness, but by making them think it's the light. And so this is beautifully portrayed in Shadows and Symbols by them saying, Benny, be better. We want you to be better. And it seems like that this would be, you know, something that would be beneficial for Benny. And yet he knows the truth, which is, no, I have to finish the story. You know, and so just a really good, I think, illustration visually and story wise of something we kind of see in this idea of this cosmic battle of good and evil. And we see that in various religions around the world.
Well, if we go back to how Sisko comes to embrace this role of emissary, because at the end, in What You Leave Behind, there's that moment where Sisko is with Cassidy, and he stops, and he says, I know what I have to do. I know why I'm here. And that's when he goes to the fire caves for the final confrontation with Dukat. But there's this lead up that happens very gradually through the show. And unlike Dukat, where the writers seemed to, when Waltz came about, the writers seemed to feel like they had to make a course correction with Dukat. And they changed Dukat from being a very interesting character to being a very black and white evil character. He had to represent evil in the way that they wanted to play out the remainder of Deep Space Nine, because they needed this conflict between Sisko and Dukat. Unlike that, I feel like we didn't get any sort of sudden change with Sisko. It built and it built and it built. And if you think back to the various moments through the series, there was the episode Destiny, where you had the Cardassian scientists and they had the whole Trekor's third prophecy story about how the wormhole was going to be destroyed. And of course, Kira, because of her very, very strong beliefs, she bought into it fairly easily and believed that, yes, this was this prophecy playing out. And, you know, as it turned out, it didn't play out exactly as the prophecy said, but there was enough of something that happened that made Sisko become a little more interested in these Bajoran prophecies. And I think it made him wonder, you know, maybe some of this stuff actually is true. And what I found interesting about what happened was that there was a scientific explanation that they didn't destroy the wormhole, but this solithium gets leaked, like trace amounts of it get leaked, and it causes the wormhole to stay open permanently, like slightly open. And of course, within the religious context, that's the celestial temple. So they can read all of that into the prophecy. I like the fact that they did balance that between a religious prophecy and a scientific cause for the resolution of that. But that spurred Sisko to study more about the Bajoran prophecies. You know, he learns to read ancient Bajoran as well. And that continues on forward to things like when he found Bahala.
I think one of the neat things about what you just said was that Deep Space Nine really showed that there isn't such a dichotomy between science and religion, science and faith, that there was a way that these actually do work together. And I think that's one of the things, like you said, in Destiny, is that Sisko begins to see that there's more to these prophecies than just some kind of esoteric prophecies that, you know, have to do with some religion that doesn't matter. He's beginning to see that these actually have something to do with reality. And yes, it sometimes has to do with interpretation, but Sisko begins to see that it might be important to know more about these, because they do seem to be having an effect on the universe at large, because he's seeing them begin to come true. And yes, I think one of the pivotal moments is that Valhalla, when he finds this ancient city, something really does click in him. This is the first time that Sisko becomes kind of obsessive about his role as emissary, and we find out that he's been given a special vision by the prophets, and it really helps push that story forward. And I think not only does the uniform change in that episode, we get the first contact uniforms in that episode, which couldn't get there soon enough, but we finally get Sisko fully on the path to being the Sisko, the emissary. I think becomes fully sold out to that role in that episode.
Right. And that's also the point at which Kai Wynn finally accepts that Sisko is the true emissary, because, you know, up to that point, she's really fought against the idea that he is the emissary. If you go back into season one in something like In the Hands of the Prophets, you know, she's willing to commit terrorist acts aboard the station to fight the idea that an outsider could be the emissary, and that these people from outside are coming in and teaching something that's against the faith. Because, you know, we have to remember that Kai Wynn is basically an ultra conservative on Bajor. But here in Rapture, when he finds the city, that's kind of a turning point for Kai Wynn as well. And It also brings into question for me, when we become obsessive about something, when we study something so much, how does that obsession affect our reading of reality? Because Sisko is able to find Bahala because he has a vision, but he has the vision after he has begun studying this painting in such detail. And like you said, he becomes obsessive about this lost city afterwards he has the vision. But of course, the vision actually does lead him to real ruins. And there he does find tablets that say, "Welcome, Emissary." And he finds out about, you know, the orb of the Emissary.
I think that this is one of those instances where there's a difference between the kind of obsession of somebody like Kai Winn and the one of Sisko. Because for Sisko, this becomes about true faith in the prophets. And that will play out later in the Reckoning. But this, you know, Kai Winn, on the other hand, has always been and is always seen as using her religion as a way of power, and a way to hold on to power. And that there's a huge difference between true faith and somebody just using a faith for power. And then, unfortunately, we've seen this many, many times around the world of people twisting a faith for their own benefit, and the difference that is between what you see in somebody like Sisko, who this faith and belief becomes a benefit for other people. And that's a big dichotomy, and they really play that up as the seasons go on with Kai Winn and Benjamin Sisko.
Well, it's kind of, you know, we talk about Sisko as the unwilling emissary, and he comes to accept his role. I think he comes to believe in the faith for the most part, but it's something that comes to him as part of who he is. It's not something that he sees as something that he can leverage for his own power, like you said. It's something almost that he doesn't want, but he comes to feel that it actually is the reality of his existence.
And I think that it's the story of seeing somebody go from no faith to true faith. And I think the way that a true convert is made to any faith is somebody who is able to kind of almost unwillingly be drawn into it. This happens. C.S. Lewis talks about this when he was studying Christianity, talking to his friend Tolkien. He didn't really want to believe it. He really wanted to disprove it. But he said before he became a Christian then that it was almost as if the hounds of heaven were at the door and they were kind of dragging him towards faith, and he couldn't do anything about it. And this is kind of what happens to Sisko. He kind of just gets dragged along into it until it becomes his faith fully.
So a moment ago, you were talking about how things eventually play out in Reckoning.
Yes. One of the most interesting things I noticed that not only does Sisko get to mirror Moses, but he also gets a chance actually to mirror Abraham. There's another famous story where Abraham has been promised that he will be the father of a nation. Him and his wife have a child very late in life. They're very old. He gets a vision from the Lord. He is called by the Lord to bring his son, his only son, and sacrifice his son. He puts his son on the altar. He is about to sacrifice his son, and the angel of the Lord comes and says, "No, don't do it. Your faith has been rewarded. You've been seen to be faithful, and you would give up your own son. Here, take this ram that's caught in the thicket and use this instead." The same thing happens to Ben in this episode. The Paw Wraith has been released, and the whole goal was that this Pa'wraith and this prophet would meet and they would battle and they would choose the most worthy for them. And so Jake is chosen as the Pa'wraith's emissary, basically. And Kira is chosen as the prophet's. And they battle on the Deep Space Nine Promenade. And Sisko will not let this battle be stopped, even though he could. And he's putting all of his faith in the prophets that they will save his son, even though basically they're trying to kill him. And I just thought, this is a man who is completely sold out at this point. There's no doubt that he believes now, which to some people makes him seem crazy. In fact, Kai Wynn thinks he's crazy. So Kai Wynn goes to Ops and releases this radiation that will keep the Prophet and the Pa'wraith from being able to stay on the station, and they have to leave, and therefore the Reckoning cannot be complete, and it will have to happen later, which obviously comes up later in Deep Space Nine. And so this is just a very interesting episode. What did you think about that, Chris?
Well, I think it's interesting that Sisko puts so much faith in the prophets to save Jake that he's willing to let this go on and possibly sacrifice his son. Whereas Kai Wynn, who is supposed to be the leader of the Bajoran religion, doesn't let it continue. Because, again, we talked a moment ago about a true believer or not a true believer and using religion as a tool for your own power. Sisko, the outsider, represents the person who comes to be the true believer, whereas the actual leader of the Bajoran religion, Kai Wynn, proves herself to not be a believer. And she uses the prophecies, she uses the religion as a tool for her own power.
Definitely. And I think that that's one of the things that makes the story of Sisko so interesting, again, of taking a character who was not a believer in anything and whose life is kind of mired in the past and what's happened there, and he can't move forward, to being somebody who is completely sold out to a belief system that he used to consider just myth or just what these people believe. It's a really interesting story. And, you know, you end up then with Sisko as emissary facing Dukat down as the emissary of the Pa'wraiths, and end up battling basically in hell. So the emissary's task was complete, but the Sisko, they say his destiny is far from over. And it always made me wonder, even if the books had never happened, you know, what would have happened if Deep Space Nine then had gotten a film? What might be Sisko's, you know, mission?
Yeah. Well, after let me ask you this question. Of course, we know things played out in the novels afterwards. However, I was always kind of disappointed with the ending of Deep Space Nine, because I felt that the appropriate end for Sisko's journey was that he would die at the end of What You Leave Behind. But instead, he was saved and he went to be with the prophets. How do you feel? Do you feel that was a cop-out by the writers? Do you feel they were afraid to take that final step? Do you think it's the appropriate end to the journey? Because again, we look at this from a different perspective, because you look at these things more from a religious perspective and I look at them more from an atheist perspective.
Well, one, it does fit the storyline of Moses. Moses can't go into the Promised Land because he broke the tablets. He broke the original Ten Commandments. God has to remake them because Moses gets angry and smashes them. And his punishment is that he will be able to lead his people to the Promised Land, but he himself will not be able to go into it. And God will then takes him up after he dies to be with him in heaven. And so that actually fits exactly what happens to Sisko. Sisko's punishment from the prophets for marrying Cassidy is that he will find no rest on Bajor. And so, yes, this actually fits very well, I think, with the motif that the writers have already been using throughout the series. And I don't necessarily have a problem with it. It also fits, you know, in some ways, the kind of Christ-like figure that he semi-represents as well, that after his task is complete, he goes to sit at the right hand of God. And again, you know, Sisko being part prophet, you know, that is almost in some ways a reward. On the completely non-religious side, I know that Avery Brooks didn't want, number one, Sisko to die, and he didn't really want him being turned into a god because he didn't want to see a African-American son be left by his father. He didn't want that to be portrayed on TV. And so one of the things that they did was to have it open-ended, that Sisko could come back. And to me, as being somebody of faith, I like this ending. I think it's strong. I think it fits the motifs and the storyline that's been going on throughout the series. If anything, though, one of the things that I've seen, I almost might have enjoyed Worf getting to kill Dukat, because he killed Jadzia. Talk about poetic justice. I think that would have been an interesting end there. But of course, the way they've brought Dukat on, this makes sense to me. I think it works.
And I mean, Dukat was set up to be the antithesis of Sisko at the in the final battle.
And hey, you know, Worf gets to kill Gowron, so that's always fun.
Well, the way you explain it there, I can definitely see that. Again, that's an angle that I've never really thought about that much in terms of how they concluded Sisko's journey. So if you put all the pieces together and all the analogies that you've made today, the ending makes a lot more sense to me in that respect. I guess I wanted some finality. But I'm also the person who thinks that Voyager should have been stranded in the Delta Quadrant at the end of the series. So
that'll make our To the Journey friends very happy.
I don't know. I guess I think, you know, life doesn't always have happy endings. And but then again, you know, in this case, it's not necessarily a happy ending. I mean, Benjamin and Cassidy are separated while Cassidy still is going to give birth to their child. Jake is separated from his father. The final scene of What You Leave Behind is very powerful, with just Jake and Kira staring out the window and knowing that, you know, he's out there somewhere, but they are separated. And the prophets talk about how, you know, the marriage to Cassidy will result only in sorrow and strife, and that Sisko won't find peace on Bajor, even though he is of Bajor. And, you know, ultimately it's that separation. The prophets pulled them all apart from one another and kind of left them hanging. So it's not a happy ending.
Because, yeah.
Forget about the novels, which did resolve a lot of this. For those who only follow the television show, I guess Sisko's journey, the way it turned out, maybe it is better that he didn't die, because for a series that was so much about real life and that was so much about the gray in which we live, they left us hanging at the end. And they pulled away from the station and never to go back. So maybe that is real life.
Yeah, it's very unfinished in a lot of ways. I mean, to me, it's one of the best ends of a show ever, because I felt like it was very satisfying. And the crew itself is kind of breaking up. People are going different places. The O'Briens are leaving and things like that. And the station itself, the whole place will never be the same. And I think that's very interesting. And Worf is leaving. He's going to be an ambassador, and all of this kind of thing is happening. And again, it's very much like real life. This is not the Enterprise, and everybody's not on the same ship for 30 years. And so this, like you said, fits the story that Deep Space Nine has been telling.
Yeah.
And it's very realistic.
And so the station will never be the same, but yet there are always those little echoes left behind. There's the scene of Kira sitting in the office because she's now in command, but Sisko's baseball, she picks up Sisko's baseball. You know, it's still there. It's like he's gone, but there's always this echo left behind.
Well, and in some ways, I feel like that was a sly reference for the writers to say Sisko will be back.
Yeah.
Because his baseball is still there. And that's a very powerful metaphor for Sisko.
Yeah.
Is his baseball.
And so, that was used earlier when they abandoned the station during the
exactly.
war. And
exactly.
And Dukat said, yeah, I know he'll be back. His baseball is still here. So, yeah.
Well, Chris, one last thing that I wanted to ask, and you being on one side and me being on the other, how do you feel about the idea of using something like destiny or being guided by some kind of force, gods, all that kind of thing in Star Trek, a more humanist approach, but not always. I mean, even Gene Roddenberry himself wasn't complete atheist. He was more of a kind of a polytheist himself. And so, it makes me wonder, what do you think about that idea, especially here couched with Sisko and Deep Space Nine?
I think it's a good way to talk honestly about the world. Now, I don't personally believe that there is any God or supernatural power who's guiding my life. But at the same time, I also believe that things have a way of working themselves out. It's what Spock said in The Undiscovered Country when he was talking to Valeris. And he said, you have to have faith that the universe will unfold as it should. And when I look at events in my life, you know, I see those moments where they're turning points, and maybe it's the benefit of hindsight. You know, it's easy to connect the threads when you look back. But it feels like somehow life does have a way of working itself out, which can make you feel like something is guiding that. And maybe it's just the way our brains work. Maybe it's simply that when we do look back at it, we can connect the dots and we can see this path and we think something is guiding that path, when it may actually just be a series of random events that you can always justify as having led you from point A to point B to point C. But then again, for other people, there is this feeling that something is guiding and you put your trust and faith in something. And that's also a powerful thing. And the reality of life is there are people like you and me who see things from both sides of that. And it's ultimately what works for you and what makes you, what makes it possible for you to be successful in life and be happy and find something that you believe in, whether it's organized religion or whether it's a spirituality or whether it's just faith in nature or whether it's science. And the fact that Deep Space Nine was willing to take that on was breaking from the Star Trek mold and talking about real life in a way that hadn't been done in the past. So to answer your question in simple terms, I guess I'm glad that they did it. I have a different view of destiny and spirituality, but Deep Space Nine doesn't push either view on you. You know, you have characters who believe one side, you have characters who believe another side, all the way to the very end, and it puts all of the evidence out there in front of you, and it lets the viewer make a decision. And I think that's what good storytelling does.
I think that is a benefit for Deep Space Nine, and probably for me the ultimate highlight, being somebody of faith. And I would say, honestly, in the Star Trek community, you don't find a lot of love for people of faith. And Deep Space Nine, I think, does a really good job of helping those of us who do have it to feel legitimized within the community. Because what Deep Space Nine does for people of faith, for even organized religion, it shows that this does have a place, even in the galaxy, in the 24th century. And it makes you wrestle with the fact, I think, of whether or not it is true or not. And what Starfleet believes and the Federation believes about the wormhole aliens is true. What the Bajorans believe about the prophets is true. They're both true. They just come at it from a different perspective. And I think that for what it does as well, for the idea that faith and science are not necessarily at odds, was also very interesting. So I'm very glad that Deep Space Nine and the creators of Deep Space Nine just decided to tackle such a huge issue and to do it in a way of ultimate class. Because as you said, this does not make fun of anyone on any side. And it gives the viewer the opportunity to make the decision for themselves. And I personally, as a person of faith, that is my only goal. I'm not here to convert anyone. My goal would be to allow my life and my beliefs, therefore, to speak for themselves and allow you to make the decision. And so I'm very thankful for Deep Space Nine in this way.
Well, this has been a very interesting journey for us as to walk along with Sisko as the emissary. You know, we started the show talking about how he arrived at Bajor, and we've gone from the moment that Kyle Paca tells him that it's ironic the one who does not wish to be among us is to be the emissary, all the way to the end when Sarah, as her prophet in the wormhole, tells him that your time of trial has ended and you need to rest now. It's one of the greatest character arcs in Star Trek history, and I think it's why, yeah, if you look at all the captains, if you look for depth, if you look for the richness of character, Benjamin Sisko, I think, is an underappreciated captain and went on an amazing journey and one of spirituality, which is something that you just don't see in Star Trek.
Well, Chris, why don't we tell everyone where they can find us on the internet, on the interwebs? Where can we find you, Chris? And as well, where can we contact the show?
If you'd like to send us a message, and I have a feeling a lot of people will after this discussion, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There is a form there, and you can send a message to the orb that will come to Matthew and myself. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course over on Twitter under username trekfm. And Matthew, how about you personally?
Personally, you can find me on Twitter at mattrushing02. Of course, talking Star Trek and Deep Space Nine, the literary treks as well, talking about the literary universe. Please hit me up, follow me, give me an at reply. We'll talk about all these issues. It's so much fun to be able to talk about Star Trek in this way and really get deep. I'm very excited to be a part of this. And hey, if you do have an opportunity, please leave us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate that, and it does help people find the show. We are new, so we do appreciate those who have already reviewed the show, and we ask you to do that for us so other people can find this great show.
Yeah, the workings of the iTunes store and how they return search results for podcasts is almost as mysterious as the non-linear nature of the wormhole aliens / prophets. So you want to help us out on that. All right. And while you're at it, hop over to trek.fm and check out all of our other shows. We've got 11 shows on the network now. We're covering everything from broad discussion of all the series to Star Trek Online, creative work of Star Trek creatives outside of Star Trek. We even talk about science, and actually on Matterstream, we even talk about religion. So go over and check all of those out at trek.fm. Well, Matthew, it has been great talking about Cisco with you today. The Cisco, I should say. But I think it's time for us to close the orb. So we'll see everyone next week.